Welcome to the Begin the Begin podcast. My name is Jeff Hillemeyer, and I'm on a mission to find out what makes people tick. But not just anyone, people who are making a profound impact on the world. I want to dig into their origin story and get to the root of why and how they do what they do. I hope you are as inspired coming out of these conversations as I am. Let's get into it. Hi, friends. On this episode, I have Adam Albrecht joining me. Now, Adam is, he's been a longtime friend. He was a coworker of mine. We helped build Engage together. He's an author, and he and I are co-authors of my latest book, The Culture Turnaround. So we worked hard on that book together, and in this episode, we decided to talk before the book and share some stories about culture and what we think is important about culture, how we've gone about building cultures in the companies and teams we've worked with. So I hope you guys get a lot out of this, and please go check out the book, The Culture Turnaround. Okay, this is a really exciting podcast episode for me because I have my good buddy Adam Albrecht joining me. Adam and I co-wrote a book called The Culture Turnaround. We're going to talk about that. But Adam, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. You look good. You look happy.
I am happy. Other than I just came off, you know, like the rest of us came off of a several day long weekend with family and a lot of food and rest and got some good exercise. I'm feeling great.
Nice. Coming out of Thanksgiving break, feeling healthy and having had exercise. I don't know that I can relate it quite as much to that.
I always start my New Year's fitness commitment about before Thanksgiving, because I feel like if you start the commitment early and you're committed to it through Thanksgiving and Christmas, I feel like it's like a head. It's like taking a flyer in a race, right? Like cheated. I got a head start. And by taking that head start, it means that I didn't overeat at Thanksgiving. I didn't overeat at Christmas. I didn't go crazy at New Year's parties. And so I end up feeling like I'm already making progress towards my New Year goals when January 1st, 2nd comes, instead of being like, well, I dug myself into this big hole over the last 6 weeks. So that's been an important technique for me.
Is that, I'm trying to remember. Have I heard that? Is that in your book?
I do talk about how the importance of starting early. So it's same idea, you know, and I also apply that on New Year's Eve, right? I've become an advocate for going to bed early on New Year's Eve so that you start, instead of staying up till midnight, go to bed early and start January 1st, fresh early in the morning and start rocking and rolling.
Yeah. I love it. Well, I mentioned your book. So, What Does Your Fortune Cookie Say is the book that you launched, which is fantastic. Hopefully everybody has seen me post about that. It still would be a great stocking stuffer for anybody who wants.
Stuff those stockings.
And you've also started an agency called The Weaponry.
Yeah. You do
lots of stuff. So now that you're both an author, entrepreneur, agency leader, you're still the most creative person I know. How do you describe yourself when someone says, what do you do?
I try and do as much as possible. You know, I'm a guy who knows that. I think my Twitter handle says, you know, I'm living life knowing that I'll be dead sooner than I want. Right. Mm. So I'm trying to pack a lot of stuff in, and I realize that we have a limited time to get all those things that we want to get done in. So yes, I'm a business owner. I own the advertising and ideas agency called The Weaponry. I usually start with that. But yes, I'm a blogger. I've just gone over 800 blog posts at adamalbrecht.blog. I've written a couple books. You know, the one you mentioned, What Does Your Fortune Cookie Say? Plus the one that we're going to talk about a little bit more. And I've got two or three other books that I've been working on as well. But I also like to add that I also coach. Right, I coach. Mm-hmm. High school track and field, and I coach youth football because my kids are involved, and I tell them the reason I got involved in coaching this, it wasn't because I'm a good coach or because I know that much, but it's because I wanted to steal time with them, right? Yeah. I recognize again that my kids are going to be gone from my household within the next, I'll be an empty nester in about 7 years, okay? So my first one leaves in 2 years, year and a half. And I felt like if I started coaching them, it would give me 2 hours every day during that season that somebody else was going to have, that somebody that I wasn't supposed to have. So I really feel like I have stolen time, and I feel like with time being our most limited resource, the more we can steal any way we can get it.
I'm telling you,
I'm like the Jesse James of stealing time.
Well, that's a great life hack. And so, what people can look forward to is, and I don't even know if you and I have talked about this, but I'm going to have my son, my oldest son, who just turned 18. He wants to be an actor. I'm going to have him do the recording for our audiobook for the Culture Turnaround, the book we co-wrote.
Awesome.
And part of the reason is so I get to work with him, right? So, put those things together. Let's jump into the topic, because you talk about family. And you know, that's one of the things that I think has always drawn me to you, is we have so many things in common. And one of which is just how important our families are to each other. And you can see it when you meet you, the things you post, the things you write about, and people should subscribe to your blog. The book we wrote is The Culture Turnaround. And it's really about creating what we call an undeniable culture with your team, with your company. But I think you and I could talk about that for a moment through the perspective of our families. You mentioned right before this, and I had forgotten this, we both have three sisters, which I think is unique.
It is unique. I mean, when people always ask me, where are you in the birth order? Right. You know, like a lot of times people assume I'm the baby of a family. And I said, no, I'm actually the second oldest, but I'm the only boy. I've got an older sister and two younger sisters. And I think that if I peel the onion on my perspective on culture, it really starts with my family, because that's the first group, you know, that's the first group or organization that you're part of. And when if you're a six person household, like we were, you know, then that really is, it feels like an organization with organizational dynamics and an ability to encourage and inspire and make you feel safe and make you feel proud, make you feel, give this sense of belonging. And so I definitely attribute my value on the importance of culture to my parents, Bob and Jill Albrecht, but my parents are also from very large families. My mom's from one of nine kids, my dad's one of 12. Yeah. And so when you go beyond that, my inner circle family, that next ring has had a great influence on me too. You know, the Albrecht side and the Sprouse side have just been supportive and successful and inspiring and fun and funny. And all that sends you off into the world, you know, ready to attack and feeling great. And like, you've got a great supportive cast behind
That's
you.
Right. I tell my kids all the time, because my three sisters all live, you know, within 8 to 10 miles from my house. My mom and dad, the same, my wife's mom and dad, her brother. So like, they're surrounded by this support system, to your point. Right. And I think they're growing up so much healthier and happier. And it's why whenever, you know, I've been asked to move out of Atlanta for business reasons. And I've always said, well, there's no way I couldn't possibly do that. This is such a unique experience. If you had to pick a few words that would define the culture you're trying to create in your house today with your children, what would be a couple of words you'd use?
Well, I've got five, right? So, so I'll just share this, that we are overt about family expectations. And so we have what we call the five most important things in my household. I could ask my kids, and have for many years, even when they were very little, what are the five most important things in life? And that is to be smart, funny, brave, nice, and adventurous. Okay. And so those five things play into everything we do, right? So, and they also, so they play into the inspiration of our family. They play into our, you know, it's a core to our values and how we operate, but it also is great for teaching lessons, because when things go wrong, I'd say, which of those five most important things are we not paying attention to here?
I love it. I love it.
And so those are key drivers, and I'm very very overt about this. It's interesting for me, because my parents, especially when I think about my dad, he wasn't a guy who said, "Here's how you do it, right? Here are the things I'm going to tell you." He was an actions guy, right? So I watched him and learned from his work ethic, from his integrity, you know, from his his care, the way that he loved his family, you know, and supported us. But I hope I'm doing those things, but I definitely definitely am overt with the lessons I'm trying to teach my kids. I'm curious how you do it. What words describe your household?
Yeah. Well, I want to ask before I answer, I just want to poke on one of those and ask you, why is being funny important? I mean, I think I sort of get it, but yeah. I love that concept.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's super important, I think, because it is, it's about perspective. It's about resilience. And it is, you know, being able to laugh at ourselves and laugh at, you know, at the world. You can always, if you want to see the world as a horrible tragedy, it's easy to do, right? And if you want to look at it as a hilarious comedy, you can do that too, right? So that's part of it, is that I'm encouraging my kids to always see the funny in this, right? And the idea of being funny and enjoying funny also is that one of the greatest connectors to others.
Yeah.
Right. So I encourage that. I enjoy the humor in our family, and I enjoy it in my kids. And I love the way that it helps us go through our daily challenges.
Yeah. Right? So that, I love that. So I guess I would add, because some of those are similar, although I love the fact that you have it very specifically laid out and they can talk about it. It's funny because I do that with my businesses around purpose, vision, tenets, and values. Yeah. And we work to make sure everybody can sort of recite those, but I've never done that with the family. So that's a good tip for me.
Hey, let me just say, it's a fun exercise to do with the family. In fact, we had four for a long time, and we had to vote on whether or not we were going to go with five. Mm-hmm. And so we had a temporary fifth, which was adventurous. Uh-huh. So it was smart, funny, nice, smart, funny, nice and brave for a long time, and adventurous was added in. And it's fun because there's five of us, so to have five is great. But I encourage you to think about doing this as even something like a New Year's Day, a New Year's Day family experience, to say, let's talk about this new year and write down our five, you know, our three, four, five, six most important things.
I love it. We will absolutely do that, and I'll report back. I think the only thing I would say, add to that, you said kind, and I think I would use empathetic. I just feel like at least my kids are growing up in such a privileged and wonderful experience, right? Like, and there's so many people that just don't have that. And so making sure that they remember, you know, how fortunate they are, and that sometimes, you know, like if a waitress is rude to us, and, you know, when that waitress walks away, it's like, well, why was she rude to us, guys?
Right.
And I've done that with my kids, and well, maybe something bad happened. Maybe. And it's like, yeah, that's right. She might be having a tough day, so let's give her a break. So just that's the thing I'd add, but fun, adventurous. We take big trips. I think we're on the same page there. Yeah, another thing we have in common, our Venn diagram, is that we both played college athletics.
Right.
And I think the big families, the supportive families, the humor in both of our sort of ethos, and then growing up playing sports and then playing college sports, I bet those things really added up to us feeling like culture is so important. And I've always strived, ever since the college team days, trying to build a team at companies where it feels at least that close, or, you know, close to it. So I'm curious, is that something you look back on as very formative for you?
It was huge. So I go back to, I had a really great team culture with my high school football team. That's where I'd say I first experienced that. And there are 12 of us who played together from my class all the way through my senior year. And we made it to the state semifinals in football, both my junior and senior year. And I'm still extremely close to those guys. And we did a Zoom on the night before Thanksgiving. We try to do that every year, and we have a text group and stuff that maintains. But where it was the real eye opener for me was college track. Okay, so I was on the track team at the University of Wisconsin. I was a discus and hammer thrower there, and my first 2 years of school, we were fine. I had an okay experience. The program overall was okay at that time. But I never felt connected to many of my teammates. I felt connected to some of them, but I didn't feel connected to the organization as a whole or to all corners of it. There wasn't that thing that said, if you are on this team, then we're all brothers. Mm-hmm. You know, I had people who were good friends, but I didn't feel this brotherhood towards them. After my second year, my coach, my my um, my throwing coach left and took another great opportunity at Wake Forest. And a new coach came in. And of course, what does that do to culture? That's going to change things one in some way. And I had no idea how good things were going to get after, you know, with that change. So that shift changed the chemistry. It changed the dynamics of our team, brought us all together. And we started, and I remember the very first practice that fall of my redshirt sophomore year. Okay. So my third year in school, but I did five because I redshirted my first year. That first fall when Mark Napier, when he joined, there was just such a great chemistry and attitude and expectation that we then started all practicing in the fall. We all started warming up together. All the practices were as a team. We won and we lost and we suffered and we succeeded as a team. And suddenly that bond that was created through that culture made those guys my brothers.
Yep.
Okay. And the impact of it was immense. And we then my junior and senior year, we were Big Ten champs in the, both indoor and outdoor, for in track and field. And we just crushed. We were, I think my senior year, we were sixth in the nation, the year after they were fourth in the nation. And it kept rolling and to be part of that and recognizing how the values and togetherness, mm-hmm. the connectedness of a team, the honesty, the openness, to see how that led to success and beyond the success, the feeling that it instilled in the members of that team, did the same thing for me that you talked about. I wanted to make sure that I enjoyed that the rest of my career too. I said, there's no reason you wouldn't have that same feeling and that same connectedness in business.
The thing that I think is so interesting about that is, you know, I played tennis. And so it wasn't until college, that was the first time I was on a team. Because I had a doubles partner, but that, you know, that was it until college. And then you're suddenly on a team. But what's interesting is, I think most of the events that your team participated in were individual, right? Mm-hmm. Just the way that tennis, even though we were team, we'd go out and we'd play singles, right?
Yep. Yep.
But having that camaraderie, I mean, I swear we played better and did much better in my senior year as well in the conference championship. We beat the number one seed who we never should have been able to beat. But it was all individual. So when we walked out on the court, it was the number one player versus their number one, and their number one was much higher ranked. And the same thing for their two and their three and their four and their five, but somehow we came together. So you talked, and I put a lot of that toward my coach. You talked about the new coach coming in.
Yep.
And that's something else I wanted to hit on with businesses. You know, to me, it all starts with the leader and certainly the leadership team. And excuse me, we'll talk about when that went badly, the early years of Engage, I would say because of the leader. But I guess I'd talk about that for a minute or ask you to talk about that because I, you know, you seem like you've been a sort of a leader, at least as long as I've known you, but most of your life, like you want to take the reins, you're happy to take the pressure in the how important is the leader to the culture? Obviously they can't, you know, force it in, but if they don't believe in it and they don't embody it, I mean, that's the end, right? It has to start there.
It's huge. It's huge. So I remember earlier in my career, there being a creative director that I worked with, the creative lead within an agency. And that person was what I would call antagonistic with the other leaders within the organization. Okay. And so because my career has been in advertising, the creative director has a significant impact on the organization, right? Because without the creative is your product and without it. And so the person who's in charge of the quality and the, you know, the quality and style of that product holds a lot of weight within that organization, right? Yeah. And so when that leader, that creative director in this case, but it could be the head of sales or engineering, it could be the C-suite person, when they decide that they're going to be antagonistic or defiant of other leaders and say, this is my world or my domain, then what happens is you have headbutting and you have, you know, territorialism and silos that develop across the organization. And I recognized that when I became a creative leader, that I could do the opposite, right? Because if you saw that the leader was battling with the leader of another department, then that followed, like all the other people on the within those teams are defiant of and angry at the other people on the other groups, right? They're like the enemy. the opposite is also true. When you, as the creative lead or as the head of sales or head of engineering or product development or accounting, reach out and say, you are my partner and I collaborate with you and I appreciate you, leader of other department, then you're setting an example for everyone else. And so that was an important objective of mine when we worked together, was to make sure that the leadership was setting a great tone for everyone else and saying the expectation within this culture is that we respect and we collaborate and we appreciate and we listen. Because one of the great things about listening to and working with the other leaders within a team is that they help you eliminate your blind spots. Mm-hmm. Right. And so extremely, extremely important. And if you have leaders who don't buy in, nobody else does. It is the example that you set.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like, I probably should have said this earlier, but the way that we got to know each other was, Halyard Capital, a private equity firm out of New York, acquired my agency, SpunLogic, your agency, 10 United, a third agency, Direct Impact out of Austin, Texas, and put us all together. and, you know, just sort of, I don't know, left it to us to figure out. And I would say that from the get-go, the CEO who came from 10 United, just didn't do a good job of trying to bring us all together. It was my first experience ever, because I'd only ever run my own companies.
Right.
My only experience where I just felt like everybody was misaligned. And it was difficult. And so for several years that was the case. Let me ask you this. You can divulge what you want, but was there that dysfunction? I have to imagine that dysfunction existed at the agency before we all came together.
I'm so cringing right now. Like, there's no good answer to any of this. Okay. Jeff.
All right. No, I don't want to put you on the spot.
I'll share a bad answer. I mean, that's fine. Going back to what you said earlier about having empathy and teaching empathy to your kids. I have empathy for other leaders who aren't great at building culture, because some people, we all have our skills, right? We all have our skills and our defaults and our way of seeing the world and our operating systems. And not everyone is
that's right,
really well wired to develop culture. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there were definitely some challenges there, because, and I think that there was some people try to develop culture through force. And some try to develop, some naturally develop culture through leading, by setting an example, by reaching out and inviting and encouraging. And yeah, the initial culture at Engage when we all came together was odd, because it was territorial and it was trying to be forceful about the things that were going to have to happen. And when you do that, especially when you bring three successful companies together, you naturally will get pushback. Yeah. Right. You're going to have people say, no, if you're pushing, then I'm going to push against you. Yep. Right. And so I think what was happening at the beginning was the magnet was turned the wrong way. We had the wrong side of the magnet trying to push, and that was pushing us apart. And so thankfully, at some point we made some adjustments, which essentially flipped the magnet and allowed us to, and put people in place who were attractors, who were magnetic, who said, let's come together and make great things happen, as a team.
And I think that all stemmed from the trust that you, me, Nick, and Steve had from the get-go. And then there were others, there was Roger, there were people but the four of us really trusted each other and spent time together to build that trust. So then, again, it started from there and emanated down. I was never going to talk badly about you to anyone else in the organization. Right. If they said, well, Adam said this, I'd say, oh, well then let me talk to Adam. That sounds like it's the right decision. Once you have any visibility of a lack of trust above you, it's really hard for anyone beneath to trust. And so that I think just makes all the difference. And when I think about even we talked about sports teams, it's so much trust doesn't necessarily create the culture, but without trust, you can't have a good culture. You just can't have it.
That's right. That's right. You know, one of the things that we talked about, we gave ourselves some ground rules in the early days of our executive team. And I remember there were two that stood out to me that stand out to me. And I think about them all the time now. One was the assumption of positive intent, that we're always going to make the assumption of positive intent that if there was a mistake made or someone said something that could offend or could seem problematic, we're first going to say, no, I assume that there was something that the intention here was positive and that wasn't subversive. It wasn't backstabbing. And that helped a lot. And I think that when we all looked at each other and said, we're going to always assume positive intent here, that eliminated a lot of political BS. Okay. Yep. And then the other is, I kept it clean so our kids can listen to this. and then the other was the no a-hole rule, again, keeping it clean, right? That we weren't going to accept a-holes on this team. Mm-hmm. And those two things were instrumental in creating a really positive environment that could gain momentum because of collaboration and support.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that you talk about in the book, that I'd like you to talk about now is, and we'll try to keep it clean, but is your weenus. And I think that's spelled W-E-N-E-S-S.
Weenus, yes.
Yeah, go ahead. Talk about that. It was your concept, and I think it's brilliant.
Well, the team really embraced it. So the story is that, as Jeff mentioned, we had three organizations that came together. And that is challenging because we were three successful organizations. And beyond three organizations, it was five locations.
We had Orlando,
Columbus, Pittsburgh, Orlando, Atlanta, and Austin. Okay, so we had five offices. And everybody was feeling... there was a feeling of threatenedness to this, there was a threat to the way that we operated, to our ideals, to our processes, to our hierarchy and power. And so there was at first, a lot of defensiveness and here's how we do it and territorialism, right? And we had to get past that. We knew that we had to get past that and the way that we worked and the way that they worked and us versus them. And that identity of I'm a Spun Logic person or I'm a 10 United person or I'm a direct impact, right?
Yeah, direct impact.
And we had to get past that, right? And so we knew that to do that, we had to create a collective identity. And that collective identity is instrumental in having success after any kind of merger or acquisition. It's instrumental. I mean, it is the pass fail, yeah. Right? So once you have organizations come together, you have to figure out who are we. And so we talked, so we introduced at team meetings in all the offices, we introduced this concept of weenus, which is a funny thing to say, right? Your weenus. Hey, how's your weenus? But the idea was of feeling like we are a we, right? That there is that engage now is a we. It is a group that has come together to be amazing at what we do together. Not about what you did in the past, and not about what you do as an individual, but what do we do as a collective? And so we introduced that conceptually to give people a touchstone that we could all come together around. It was a funny term, so it got used a lot. Mm-hmm. Right. And I remember when you shared that in a post you had a month or two ago, and people were like, are we gonna talk about weenus again? Because it was like a good tagline. So we're working advertising, and a good tagline isn't that just a good tagline because it's catchy, it's because you hear it a lot, right? They become memorable through repetition. And so we repeated that term all the time. And it became it reminded us constantly that there is that we are a new team, and that it was important for us to basically put all hands in together. And when we showed that leadership, me, you, Steve Swanson, certainly Nick Bandy, our CEO, Dave Grislak, Ragu, Raj, that these, when we said that we're all in on this, Jenny and HR, when we're all in on this, then everybody else says, okay, I'm in too. And there's just there was a fundamental switch. Mm-hmm. I think that happened from us feeling like we're leaning out and we are identifying and feeling like it was cool to be part of the old team, to feeling like it was cool and advantageous for us to be part of the new team, to be part of the we. And as soon as that happened and we all jumped on, you know, we all embraced our weenus,
yeah.
Everything changed. And yeah. We went on a tear. I mean, over the next 2 years, we won so much new business. I remember you kept track of the numbers on this, but you know, we won something like 29 out of 31 pitches.
It was unbelievable. Yep.
And that's exactly what you need to do when you are, you know, when you're growing business and we were, you know, in the private equity firm, Halyard was looking to sell us. And we were on the trajectory. We created that momentum and our growth was on the trajectory to be sold, which is interesting because it meant that ultimately the things were going to change again.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, and there's so many good lessons in there. I would say anyone, you don't have to have companies coming together to try to find your weenus. You can do that if you have a small team. And I think, you know, one of the things we talk about in the book too, is like, if somebody's listening to this and let's say you run a department at a large corporation, you can find your weenus, your team's culture. You can build that. You don't have to wait mm-hmm. until you run the company. So I'd like people to think about that. I want to end with talking about,
let me just add to that. Yeah. Okay. Oh, sorry. I'm just going to add to that. Yeah. Your weenus is your team, the identity of the team. Yeah. And it's really about underscoring and identifying and praising, celebrating the identity of the team, whether it's a new team, a team of organizations that have come together, or a team that's been around for a long time and hasn't really found their stride.
That's right. Yep, exactly. So I wanted to end with, you know, we're both running companies and having had, you know, a bunch of swings at the plate. So I want to talk, first of all, just have us talk about a few things we're trying to do at our companies. One thing that I've always had success with, and I think it's even more important now that we sort of have a much more virtual world, is time together. Mm-hmm. You know, so for Dragon Army, we're completely virtual at this point. We don't have an office, but we're getting people together very frequently. And then every quarter, the whole company comes together and then an annual company trip. And for me, even at Spun Logic, when we were all together every day, those company trips, when you can get people together outside of work and just have fun, the trust that builds between people and the relationships, it just makes everything better when you get back to the office. There's you find common ground. And so I think too many times, maybe people overlook the importance of that. But I would say in this day and age, you know, most companies at best are 3 days in the office, 2 days at home. Making sure people have time to build those relationships, it can make a huge difference on the culture.
We have an office in Milwaukee, a headquarters in Milwaukee, and another office in Columbus, Ohio. We have remote people in Atlanta, and we've got a remote rock star on the lake in Kentucky, and we have another person near Detroit. And so in 2019, in the fall of 2019, we had our whole team together and it was amazing. That was the last time though. It was so fun and such a great experience to be able to go out as a full team where everybody, you know, everyone's together. Then when COVID hit, we didn't do that. And we haven't been able to for quite some time, but in 2 weeks, we're having everybody from the entire team here in Milwaukee. We've got offsites planned. It's going to be so fun. I'm really looking forward to it because there is nothing like the connection we make when we are together in person, right?
Absolutely.
The stories you develop, the camaraderie, that feeling of weenus, just can't be beat. I'm a huge office person. We have an office and we just got a bigger, better office. But the nature of work is going to continue to be flexible, so that time together is really valuable.
So that's one thing I think is important. What's something else as you build your company forward that you think people would want to know that you feel is critical to creating a great culture?
I'll just say this, two things. Knowing where you're going as a team, right? Declaring a goal and saying, here's where we're going together is huge. In fact, at the beginning of the year, I said, here's our goal, you know, here's our financial goal for the year. If we hit it, we're all getting together, no matter what, right? And so that gave us a team, you know, a clear team goal. And we've all been working really hard this year. We actually hit our goal back in October.
Wow.
I think. Yeah. And so I love the idea of us getting to really being able to get together and celebrating this together, right? So having, you know, having a good team goal, both near term and long-term, and then being very clear about, you know, about your team expectations and, you know, and really big, you know, big picture thinking and what you value, whether that is, whether that is overt or it is, you know, whether it's implied or it's explicit. I think making sure that people are, understand the rules of engagement, right? And then having a couple of simple ground rules are important for that overarching team success, because it also tells you what behaviors are wrong, what people are wrong. And by getting rid of, you know, getting the wrong people off the bus, getting the right people on the bus, getting them, you know, getting them in the right seats and then blaring the music, you know, the culture part is the last piece, right? It is the fun that you have on the bus. And so making sure that you have fun. Fun is one of our, is part of our explicit success recipe.
And I'll just sort of end with the idea that, did you ever read Setting the Table?
Oh, I love Setting the Table.
Yeah, it's such a great book. He talks about, Danny?
Meyer.
Danny talks about the idea that as the leader, and I think he uses a salt shaker in the table, and he says, you know, you sort of define the culture and say, this is how we behave. This is what we're working toward. And he puts it in the middle of the table. And then he said, and then at that point, your job is really to keep making sure that salt shaker stays in the middle of the table. And so as it starts to drift, you got to come back and remind people and reinforce. And so I think that, you know, as I think about culture and I think about leaders, which I'm guessing most of the people listening to this are leaders in some way, shape or form in their companies, I think that's the most important thing. And you talked about, you know, sort of defining it and having all those things are important. And as the leader, you have to, it's not a set it in January and then next January, thinking about it, you've got to constantly be looking at that salt shaker and moving it back to the center of the table.
That's it. I love that piece. That piece really spoke to me when I read that book, you know, and they talk about it, and the guy who taught him that lesson said, if you ever let anyone else take and, you know, decide where that salt shaker should be, you should give them the whole business.
I love it. I love it. That's right. Well, Adam, I loved working on this book with you. I loved building the culture to engage with you. I've loved watching what you've built with the weaponry. I hope we get to work on another project again. Maybe we'll do a follow-up after this, after the book's out there and people have questions. But it's been awesome chatting with you about it today.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think that, you know, what we created was so special, and I've learned so much and applied so much of what we learned working together about creating a really great and enviable culture, that I'm excited. You know, I'm excited that, you know, that after this book comes out, that we could probably go and share these ideas with some other organizations, right? I think that getting deeper into the hows and whys of what we did with, you know, whether it's, you know, my kids' sports teams or Fortune 100 companies, I think everybody could benefit from some of these lessons on developing really great team culture.
Absolutely. We're available, people. All right, Adam, I hope to see you soon.
All right. See you, Jeff. Thank you.
Wow. You made it to the end of the podcast. I didn't think people did that anymore. Well, since I still have you, I'd love for you to do two things. First, subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. That way you'll be alerted as soon as I post my next one. And second, I'd love for you to subscribe to my email newsletter. I send out an email every week or two, and it's really where I share my more personal thoughts and ideas. Plus, I give stuff away sometimes. You can find the sign up at my blog, jeffhillemeyer.com, and I really do appreciate you listening.